This is the Washington Indivisible Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Cox. This year's 60-day legislative session came to a close last Thursday, and here to talk about what got passed and what didn't is our friend, 45th LD, Senator Monica Dhingra. Senator Dhingra, hello. How are you?
I am doing so well. Thank you so much for having me on this podcast again. It's one of my favorite things to do after session.
Oh, that's wonderful. Good. Well, we look forward to talking with you each year about the things that happened during session. So let's first talk about what got passed. I want to start with a bill that begins transitioning the state's diesel school buses to an electric fleet. We know that for a host of reasons, this is a good thing. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Thank you for that. Yes, this is actually a grant program that basically helps school districts cover the difference between a diesel bus and a zero emission bus, and making sure we're providing the charging infrastructure and other expenses related to that. You know, what a lot of people forget is that our school buses spend a lot of time just idling while the kids are lining up to get on that school bus. And you know, when they're lining up right next to the school bus, guess what they're doing? They're consuming
inhaling fumes. Exactly.
And so it's actually fairly, it's pretty bad for our children. And I'm really excited about us providing these grants for the school buses. And I do want to let all of your listeners know that it is the Climate Commitment Act that is helping to fund this transition to electric buses.
Do put a pin in that because I want to come back to the initiative that looks to undo the Climate Commitment Act. Let's talk about Bill 1455. This ends child marriage in the state of Washington. I think a lot of us weren't even aware that this was something that was on the books. So tell us what this new law stipulates.
Thank you so much. You know, last year when this bill was introduced, I got to say, I was really surprised. I did not realize that this was happening in Washington. Obviously, we should eliminate child marriage. But I remember asking, but is this a real problem? And I am so shocked to hear that in the last two decades, over 5,000 children have been married off in Washington alone. We heard such compelling stories from two very specific women, one who was married off at the age of 13, another one at the age of 15. Both of them live on the East Side. One of them is my constituent. And I was so glad that we were able to end this horrible practice. I will say I was very surprised by some of the resistance on the Senate floor to this. We had amendments that wanted an exception for our judges to basically allow children to get married. And I had to argue against that multiple times. So I was a little surprised about that. And while this bill was unanimous in the House, we did have one Republican legislator voting no in the Senate, but we got it done. And we have officially banned child marriages in the state of Washington.
Good. Yeah, opposition to that is somewhat shocking, I have to say. Another bill expands the working families tax credit. This sounds like extremely good news. What can you tell us about this?
You know, I love this policy so very much. You know, when we talk about our upside down tax structure, when we talk about affordability, we talk about the burden on the poorest in our state, working families tax credit is really how we address all of those issues. So the bill that passed this session actually streamlines the application process for the working families tax credit by really trying to simplify the income verification. It eliminates unnecessary delays. And, you know, a lot of people hear about undocumented workers. They don't truly understand that these are taxpayers. And so we make sure that our undocumented taxpayers who are using the individual taxpayer identification number are also eligible for this payment because they're actually paying taxes in our state. So I'm very excited to see this policy improving. And I'm really hoping once we get all the details ironed out to be as efficient as possible, we can then expand it in the future.
Yeah, well, you know, related to that, the legislature also voted to expand basic health care for undocumented immigrants. We've seen a lot of pushback on this issue, and I usually attribute that to misunderstanding because, you know, I think people need to understand why this law is so necessary and why this is something that impacts everybody. Talk about that a little bit.
You know, everyone should have a right to basic health care. And it is really unfortunate that it is so challenging to access health care in our country. So anyone can go to an emergency room and are entitled to health care. By making sure that our undocumented population who are uninsured actually have the opportunity and the ability to enroll and get health care, it's a savings for the entire state. It is smart policy. It takes care of people who may be sick. It provides them an opportunity to do preventative care instead of the very, very expensive emergency services that all of us taxpayers will be paying for anyway. And it's the right thing to do. So I was very, very excited we got this done. We actually had over 16,000 undocumented people applying for coverage when we first made this available. And this year we added another 28 million to expand this assistance. And so I just want to let everyone know that starting in July, Apple Health, Washington's Medicaid program, will expand to cover undocumented immigrants who have incomes less than 138% of the federal poverty level. These are people who are working. We have to make sure that people have access to health care so they can be healthy and continue to contribute to our economy.
We also saw tightened rules for guns in public spaces. I think a lot of us are often dismayed and can even fear for our safety when we see people carrying firearms in public areas, particularly in official spaces. Tell us what this new law does.
You know, this is a law that basically expands upon the laws that we passed earlier that designate places where open carry of weapons is strictly prohibited. And so the new areas that are added are public libraries, are zoos, are aquariums, are transit stations, areas where we see a lot of children, hanging out there. And there is no reason to have open carry of weapons in those areas. Now, we do allow concealed weapons. We are a concealed weapons state. And so those will still be allowed, but we will not be able to see the open carry. And, I have to tell you, I cannot tell you how many calls I had gotten after the George Floyd murder when we had the Black Lives Movement. We had parents calling me saying that the kids wanted to go protest, but they were scared when they started seeing the open carry of weapons. And it really is an infringement on people's First Amendment rights if they don't feel safe to go to places to express their opinions because of the presence of guns. So I'm glad we are now no longer allowing open carry in our libraries, zoos, aquariums, and transit stations.
I like the way that you put that, the infringing on First Amendment rights. Very, very important. I will also note for folks that the legislature also voted to ban mandatory anti-union meetings that employers often use to fight union organizing drives. Very good news there. Any other bills, very quickly, that you'd like to call out?
Well, I always have a great number of bills that I work on, and so thank you for asking. I have to say, I am a little embarrassed that in the short session, I had 12 bills that passed. And while I would love to talk about all wonderful of my 12 policies, I will limit it to some of the big ones. As you know, I do so much work in gender-based violence, and my Bill 6006 actually modernizes and expands our human trafficking laws, especially the commercial sexual abuse of minors. And I am so proud of the work done on that bill, huge bill. The other one was on sexual assault. We're really making sure we're supporting our crime victims and are being victim-centered. I want to highlight both of those because it really took all the advocates in the communities and a year-long working process to get that done. I also had a bill where we're the first in the nation to try to do full faith and credit towards tribal warrants. And this is a very complicated legal piece on how jurisdictions interact with each other. And a lot of it stems from the fact that when these laws were enacted, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have a lot of our technology. And so we have to modernize the manner in which we treat other jurisdictions and other nations within the state of Washington. So I'm very excited for that. And I have to do a shout out to all the great youth in our community. Kids from Eastlake High School had petitioned me to work on a bill that provides bleeding kits in our schools and make sure there's mandatory training. And the other advocacy group who joined in to support our youth were the surgeons So the National Surgeon Association was behind this bill along with the youth in our state, and I'm just so proud of getting that across the finish line as well. So I'm just highlighting four of my 12 bills that I passed, but there was amazing, great policy that passed this session.
Well, we know you're always busy every session, and thank you for your work there. I want to ask about the legislature's decision to pass three of the six Republican-backed ballot initiatives. We've come to refer to these as the backwards Washington measures. Thank you, Fuse Washington. So 2111 bans an income tax. 2181 is the so-called Parents' Bill of Rights. 2113 rolls back rules prohibiting police high-speed chases. I'll ask you about specifics on each, but first, just talk about why this Democratic-led legislature chose to pass any of these Republican-backed initiatives.
You know, when these initiatives first got certified, I was just like, absolutely, we're not going to do this. And then we really started taking a look at the initiative language, started taking a look at what are the real consequences of these initiatives, and frankly, taking a look at what it means for us to have six initiatives on the ballot. And so I'm going to start with the income tax one because, you know, the decisions on what the legislature did is very dependent on each of these initiatives. When we took a look at the language of the initiative, it basically says no income tax unless there's a vote of the people. That is current law. We
It's in
cannot
our
do,
Constitution, isn't it?
it's in our Constitution. We cannot do a state income tax without the vote of the people. I mean, the only people talking about a state income tax, frankly, are the Republicans. So we thought maybe there was something in there with the definitions. Maybe they were trying to go after the capital gains excise tax. Maybe they were trying to go after the Long-Term Care Act. And we got legal opinion after legal opinion that no, that wasn't true. The OFM did their fiscal note, which said it had zero impact on our budget. And so
OFM, Office of Financial Management.
correct. Thank you so much. And so, you know, we decided that is current law. There is no reason for us to try to confuse voters on what might be happening. And so that's why we decided to vote on it because it is current law.
Well, then let's talk about if we made the Parents' Bill of Rights. So this stipulates that parents can access their children's curriculum, but also their medical records, their health records, their counseling records. I know a number of LGBTQ groups are concerned that this will keep some children from seeking counseling about sexual identity issues or reproductive health issues. Talk about why the legislature moved to pass this bill.
So I'll just say, as a parent of a trans kid, this was extremely concerning to me, this initiative. And again, we spent a lot of time really making sure we are getting legal input into this, really figuring out what all of this entails. And what we found is that 90% of what is in the initiative, again, is current law. It is simply repeating things that parents already have a right to. They can examine textbooks, curriculum, disciplinary actions. What was interesting to me and what I was very focused on is ensuring that every single child, and I mean every single child who is LGBTQI or anyone who wants to access reproductive health care, that they're not going to be impacted by this. And they're not, because we actually have HIPAA laws, we have healthcare privacy laws. None of that are impacted by this bill. So it was only after really examining what the language says, the manner in which it's written, and the information that is protected. When the Senate was unanimous, because we felt very confident that this is going to not adversely impact our youth in the least bit. And so I know we will be watching very, very carefully to see what our schools do in the fall, but this really should not be adversely impacting our LGBTQI individuals or our kids who want to access contraception or need to have a conversation about reproductive rights because all of that information is protected under HIPAA.
It is my understanding that if there's any fallout from this that the legislature would like to take on, they are able to do that. Whereas if this passed as a ballot initiative, the legislature would be locked out from making any change to any of these laws for 2 years. Do I have that information correct?
That is absolutely right. We would not, as a legislature, be able to impact any adverse unintended consequences if this went to the voters and got passed. And this is why we're going to keep a close eye on it, because this law will go into effect over the summer when our schools are out of session. Come August, we will all be watching very, very carefully. And I can tell you, I am so committed that even if a single child thinks is adversely impacted, I will make sure we go into a special session to fix it. Because in the state of Washington, we lead the nation when it comes to protecting our LGBTQI youth, and we will continue to do so. So I want everyone to be very, very clear. We want to hear if there are any issues going on in any school district across the state, but the legislature is willing and ready to act if any of that happens. And we are in a position to do so because we are the ones that voted for it in session.
You know, some have speculated that these three bills out of the six were designed to create outrage, drive MAGA voter turnout. I'll just ask you to speculate. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think you're right. The person who is behind these initiatives is a very right-wing Republican, along with the chair of the Republican Party in Washington. It was extremely strategic of them wanting to drive voter turnout because we know that the election in November is going to be critical, and we need people to get excited about voting. And removing these three initiatives from our ballot, I think, removes that imperative. I also think that our youth and Democrats are very convinced that we need the Climate Commitment Act. And I'm really hoping that everyone will come out and say that in our state, we believe that we need to be on track to meet the Paris Agreement. I think we're the only state on track to meet the Paris Agreement, and the only way we get there is through the Climate Commitment Act. So it is critical that everyone come out to vote and defeat this initiative. And I'll say, even the other one with the capital gains excise tax, we all know that we have such an upside-down tax structure. We know that it is only, I think, something like 3,000 households that pay the capital gains excise tax. And again, just a reminder, this is a tax you pay after you have made a profit of $250,000 in 1 year. And so while 3,000 households are paying this tax, about 8 million Washingtonians are benefiting from it because it is going to provide affordable childcare, early learning, K-12 programs in communities throughout Washington. And this is what Washingtonians want. They want us to address the upside-down tax structure. And so I'm very confident that the voters will understand what this is about and will defeat it at the ballot.
Yeah, messaging is super critical here. This 2109, what you're talking about, which would end the capital gains tax, would eliminate $900 million for childcare in schools. 2117, the one that we were talking about earlier, which would roll back the Climate Commitment Act, would end the Cap and Invest program. This raised $1.8 billion last year. And then 2124 is a so-called opt-out measure, which would take away $8 billion with a B in long-term care benefits. I think it's so important that we message to voters that these initiatives are not in their best interest on climate, on schools, on taxation, on healthcare, the rest of it. So finally, I do want to ask you about some of the bills that did not pass in this year's session. Let's talk about a couple of housing bills because I know that they were in the spotlight. I want to start with the rent stabilization bills. Renters currently have very little protection against price gouging. So tell us what this bill would have done.
You know, I was so disappointed to see that we couldn't get this bill out this session. And this bill, as the version that finally that people were coalescing around, was really making sure that there was a 7% cap on increases in rent in a year, which is extremely reasonable. And it really made sure that, again, there was some protection for renters to make sure that they could have some predictability. You know, in Redmond, I remember the last in the year before, I heard from renters whose rent went up by 40%. Ooh. That's 40. And it's shocking to me. I don't know how people can budget for that kind of lifestyle when their rent goes up by 40%. And so it was really critical to have a cap on increases. And this is only for the current renter. So if the renter left and they were getting a new renter, they can charge whatever rent they wanted. And so that cap wasn't something that was with the unit, but was with that rental agreement. And it really required 6 months' notice for a rent increase in excess of 3%, which again is really making sure that you are allowing people to budget. You are working with them in order to ensure that they can continue to stay in their apartments. And it eliminated excessive penalties, it capped late fees, things like that, that again really make sure that we're not putting undue burden on our renters. So we unfortunately could not get this across the finish line. I am pretty confident that next year we will be able to. That we have to make sure that we are providing protections for renters.
Good. I'm glad to hear you say you anticipated my question. I was going to ask about your thoughts on next year. So good. I'm glad that that's going to be making a comeback next year. I want to ask you about another housing bill, a 2276. This is the Affordable Homes Act. So this proposal would have created a permanent income source for the Housing Trust Fund and affordable housing for people with disabilities. What more can you tell us about this bill and why it didn't pass?
You know, there were a lot of bills this session that were trying to raise revenue. And I think there was just simply not an appetite in the legislature to, frankly, vote on anything that would add taxes, especially doing
Well,
with.
it's an election year, so I'm sure that that's top of mind for a lot of legislators, yeah.
It's you know, and apart from being an election year, I think affordability is an issue we heard about across the state. There are people who are struggling with paying their bills, while the economy is doing really well. So, you know, it's a really interesting place to be at. But you're right, it is an election year. People felt very cagey in voting for this. I am a co-sponsor of the bill, so it'll tell you where I am. That's why I didn't go anywhere. But I just want to be very, very clear. This was adding a 1% to the real estate excise tax on properties that sell for more than $3 million.
So once again, impacting a very slender group of individuals, right?
A very slender group of individuals, only homes selling for more than $3 million. And you know, again, these are the things we have to do in order to address our upside down tax structure. And so it is targeted very specifically to only those individuals who can afford to pay that. And what you're raising those funds for is for affordable housing. So really making sure that we are working to house as many people as possible in the state of Washington.
The last bill that I would like to ask you about is the Oil Industry Accountability Act. This would have created transparency around how gas prices are set, something that I think is pretty important right now and pretty salient because gas price is obviously a concern. This seems like it would have popular support. So what happened here?
You know, I am really not sure what happened with this bill. It seems like a very common sense approach to dealing with this. California has done something similar, and this is really making sure we understand what is going on with the cost of fuel. We have heard over and over again that Washington actually provides is some of the most profitable place for our companies because they're making a lot of money selling gas. And we do have high gas prices. So it's not clear to us what is going on. I will tell you that the Attorney General's office does have the authority to sue companies over price gouging. But if you don't have the data to really understand what is happening, you can't really go after those companies when you can't prove it's price gouging because you don't have that transparency in figuring out how the cost is established in the first place. So again, this is a bill that will be back again next year. And you know, I just want to remind all the listeners, it was a 60-day session.
Yep. It's a shorter session, and so less time to get things done, obviously. Any final thoughts before we go?
You know, I'll just say this is again another year since we took back the majority. The Democrats took back the majority with my election 2017. Thank you so much to so many of your listeners who worked on my campaign. But since then, we have ended sessions on time with balanced budgets. We have a AAA bond rating in the state. We are still ranked as one of the best states for both employers and employees. And while it may not feel like it, we have the strongest economy in the country. And so Washington again continues to lead the nation in the manner in which it is governing, truly governing. And I want to remind all your listeners, it is all under Democratic control. So let's make sure we're very clear on what happens when Democrats take control of governing. We actually govern.
Absolutely right. Perfect words to leave it on. Senator Dingell, thank you so much as always.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
And that'll do it for this week. The executive producer of the show is Kat Pipkin. If you would like to see a video version of this podcast, head to facebook.com/indivisiblepodcast. The email address for the show is indivisiblepodcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Lori Colwell. And as always, my thanks to you for listening. I'm Stephen Cox, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.